With this to say about self-reliance, here's Pastor Dave Rolfe.
Oh, I believe that God has plans for us. But if we don't listen to Him and obey Him, if instead we rely on ourselves, we're going to end up in all sorts of unholy alliances. We're going to end up with all sorts of solutions that seem to work, but at the same time, these solutions limit what God really wants to do. And in the process, we run the risk of being disloyal to God, of really relying on something other than God. Every day, we have opportunities to make decisions that have these kinds of ramifications.
Wake up, my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up, my hand. And the instrument I play. Wake up, my voice. Let the world hear me say, you are worshipped and exalted here today.
It's been said that if you set out to become prosperous and successful, you may achieve your goal and live to regret it. You see, in whatever a man does without God, he must fail miserably or succeed more miserably. We'll hear a case in point today on The Balanced Word with Pastor Dave Rolfe. In 2 Chronicles chapter 16, we're introduced to King Asa. This king, through self-reliance, achieved his goal and lived to regret it. Let's not make the same mistake. Encouraging us to rely on the Lord instead, here's Pastor Dave.
This week we've come to this passage in chapter 16 where King Asa makes a deal with the Syrians. Asa was one of the good kings in Judah. You might remember that Israel had been split up into two separate countries, basically. And it was because of the poor judgment of Solomon's son, Rehoboam. And the 10 northern tribes went together, and down in the south, Benjamin and Judah kind of hung together. Now, all of the Levites pretty much moved south because that's where the temple was, and they really weren't interested in being away from the worship of God. And then a lot of godly people went ahead and migrated to the south also. So it wasn't a strict division among tribes, but the nation was split into two, with a king in the south reigning from Jerusalem and a king in the north reigning from Samaria. And so it's in this environment. Well, what happened was the tribes in the north had made a deal with Syria. If you know your geography, Syria is up north of Israel. And they had made a deal with them, kind of an alliance to not attack each other. And having made that alliance, it made it possible for the northern tribes to focus all of their armies down toward the south and to build not only a defense of that border, but to be able to move out offensively to try to conquer Jerusalem. It would have been great for the northern tribes if they had been able to swallow up the south. Never happened, but that's what they were trying to do. So they had this deal with Syria, and now they were building up troops in the south and threatening Judah. And so in verse 1 of chapter 16, it says, in the 36th year of the reign of Asa, Baasha, king of Israel, came up against Judah and built Ramah that he might let none go out or come in to Asa, king of Judah. So he tried to strengthen his southern border. Asa brought silver and gold from the treasuries of the house of the Lord and of the king's house and sent to Ben-Hadad, king of Syria, who dwelt in Damascus, saying, let there be a treaty between you and me, as there was between my father and your father. See, I have sent you silver and gold. Come, break your treaty with Baasha, king of Israel, so that he will withdraw from me. So Ben-Hadad heeded King Asa and sent the captains of his armies against the cities of Israel. And they attacked Ijon, Dan, Abel-Maim, and all the storage cities of Naphtali. Now it happened when Baasha heard it that he stopped building Ramah and he ceased his work. And then King Asa took all Judah, and they carried away the stones and timber of Ramah, which Baasha had used for building, and with them he built Geba and Mizpah. Looked like a good plan. Asa is reasoning within himself and saying, you know what? Israel's a threat to us. And one of the main reasons why they're a threat to us is that they can put all of their troops in the south because they have peace with Syria, who's north of them. So what I'll do is we'll put a gift together, put a bribe together, and let's form an alliance with Syria. If that happens, Syria's in a stronger position, but not only that, they've been enriched by what we've given them, and now there's no way that the northern tribes can come and attack the south. And it worked. Syria backed off and, in fact, began to harass Israel in the north and take some of their border towns, seizing the opportunity. And therefore, then the king of Israel realized, we better get back and defend ourselves. And they backed off of this fortress that they had built there in Ramah. Sounded like a good idea, seemed like a wise solution. But as we read on, it wasn't such a good idea, because in verse 7 it says, "And at that time Hanani the seer," that was just another word for a prophet, "came to Asa, king of Judah, and said to him, 'Because you have relied on the king of Syria and have not relied on the Lord your God, therefore the army of the king of Syria has escaped from your hand. Were the Ethiopians and the Lubim," that is the Libyans, they had a couple chapters before had attacked with 1 million soldiers, "were they not a huge army with very many chariots and horsemen? Yet because you relied on the Lord, he delivered them into your hand. For the eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth to show himself strong on behalf of those whose heart is loyal to him. In this you have done foolishly, therefore from now on you shall have wars." And in fact, for the rest of Asa's reign, they were at war. Problems upon problems occurred to them because of this fateful decision that he made to say, "I'm going to trust Syria instead of trusting the Lord." God saw that. He described it as being disloyal. Now, he contrasted it with what had happened a couple of chapters before. And if you look back at what happened in that story, when the armies of northern Africa were invading, turn to chapter 14. 1 million men and 300 chariots were about to attack Judah from the south, from Africa. And look at verse 11. "Asa cried out to the Lord his God and said, 'Lord, it is nothing for you to help, whether with many or with those who have no power. Help us, O Lord our God, for we rest on you, and in your name we go against this multitude. O Lord, you are our God. Do not let man prevail against you.'" And it goes on to say that God struck the Ethiopians. Before the armies of Judah even had to do anything, God started wiping them out, and the armies of Judah ended up chasing them all the way into the Mediterranean and down to the southern border and beyond, all through Gaza and everywhere. I mean, just chase them with their tail between their legs, 1 million soldiers. So here in chapter 16, the Lord is telling them, back then you did it right. You listened to me. You trusted in me. You understood that nothing was too great or difficult for me, and it worked. And so God's saying here, he's going, what's up with what you're doing now? Why is it that you thought I was enough back then, but today you thought you could handle this on your own by cutting a deal, by negotiating your way towards some sort of a settlement? And this isn't just idle chatter. This is God's heart today to each of us. His eyes going to and fro, looking for someone that he can show himself strong on behalf of. Oh, I believe that God has plans for us. But if we don't listen to him and obey him, if instead we rely on ourselves, we're going to end up in all sorts of unholy alliances. We're going to end up with all sorts of solutions that seem to work, but at the same time, these solutions limit what God really wants to do. And in the process, we run the risk of being disloyal to God, of really relying on something other than God. Every day, we have opportunities to make decisions that have these kinds of ramifications. And God's looking, and he's watching, and his eyes are going to and fro. Wants to see how we're going to react. What are we going to do? How do we make our decisions? Do we listen to him and do we follow him? Well, Asa should have known right off the bat that this was a bad idea, first of all. Because notice that there in verse 2, he brought silver and gold from the treasuries of the house of the Lord and of the king's house and bribed Ben-Hadad with them. He mixed up his money with God's. He didn't ask God, should I do this? It just seemed like a good idea at the time. And so with this bribe, basically, he's going, God, I don't need you. Your money will be sufficient. And so often when we don't listen to God and instead we just figure it out for ourselves, we'll find ourselves reallocating resources that are really designed to go one place and we redirect them to go somewhere else. In Malachi, it talks about people robbing God by not giving him what they're supposed to give him, but instead they give it for something else. See, everything that we do with all of our resources, not just with our money, but with our time and with people that we know, associations that we have, knowledge and information that we possess, skills that to which we've attained, God's looking at what are we going to do with those? Are you going to listen to me as to what you do with them? Are you going to act like they're just yours to spend as you see fit? Hey, I see a need. I want to fill it. I can write a check. Boom, it's fixed. Without hearing from God. If we don't rely on God, we're going to rely on something else. And we may rely on our money. There are often people who just believe they can buy themselves out of whatever mess they're in. And so that's one option. Rely on our past successes is another. Relying on our friends, well, they'll bail me out. I can always talk to them. When I don't know what to do, I can always talk to a pastor, or I can always go to a counselor. Having a problem with my kids, I can farm them out and let someone else raise them. Relying on something other than saying, God, what do you want me to do? And how do you want me to do it? How do you want me to live my life? If we don't rely on God, we will end up relying on something that will let us down, ultimately. It might work, but it won't work the way he wants it to work. And that's what Asa should have seen right from the beginning. He had been here before. In fact, the threat from the Ethiopians and the Libyans was probably a much greater threat than the threat from Israel. Sure, they had Syria on their side, but if Syria was going to come marching down with them, well, you knew what was going to happen next. Yeah, Syria would wipe out Judah, but they're not going to hand the keys over to Israel. They're just going to go, hey, while we're here, we'll take Israel. And now all of a sudden, Syria is really big. See, it made sense in his head. It made sense in the flesh, but it wasn't God's plan. And so often we get ourselves into jams and then we just think our way out of them. It's why over in Proverbs chapter 3, it says, trust in the Lord with all your heart and... the first thing he says after that, lean not on your own understanding. You know, we tend to live our lives by our understanding. We tend to go by what makes the best sense to us. Maybe we'll get some counsel from a few other people, and then we know we make the decision that's the smart one. The problem is, as smart as we may be, we're not God. We aren't able to hear perfectly without waiting and listening to him and hanging on his every word. And the fact is, often what God tells us to do doesn't make sense. It's why he tells us not to lean on our own understanding. Because if we really listen to God and we think about it very much, we'll talk ourselves out of it. Oh, think about it in the past. Aren't there times when you felt like God was telling you to do something, but the more you thought about it, it just seemed too risky? It just seemed too expensive. It just seemed too crazy. It was like, the odds are against it. It's not going to work. Well, again, a couple chapters ago, Asa was going, God, the odds are always in your favor. It's no big deal to you to take out 1 million soldiers or 100 soldiers. It doesn't matter. God, this is your battle. But we stop thinking like that when we start thinking too much, when we start analyzing what is it that's really the best thing to do here. Oh, I find myself sometimes when people come to me for advice, I just jump in with a great answer, but then I keep talking and my answer kind of changes and it modifies. And after I talk long enough, I just feel like going, you know, I don't know what you should do. Sorry. And so often that's what we do for ourselves. It's like, yeah, I have some wisdom here. But on the other hand, and on the other hand, and on the other hand, and we don't know what to do. Because the more we think, the more of a jam we get ourselves into. We talk ourselves into certain things and out of other things, and those might not be the best things. And finally, we get so fried, we just lay there going, I don't know what to think. One of my favorite quotes from Curly on the Three Stooges was where he says, I'm trying to think, but nothing happens. I've been there. Asa was thinking too hard. He was looking for a solution, and he found one that worked, and no one would argue that it was effective. But he wasn't trusting in God. He wasn't following God. He wasn't doing what God was telling him to do. And that's a danger. That's a risk that we take. Very often, we talk ourselves out of obeying God because we think it's too risky, and we're actually taking a much greater risk. Second thing I see here that's so important to understand is why was this a bad idea? Was it because we should never make alliances? Now, we can make alliances that are very ungodly. We can fall into unequal yokes that are dangerous to us. But on the other hand, sometimes God calls us to an alliance. The problem wasn't the alliance or even the payoff. Sometimes you just have to pay. But the problem was not listening to God. And why? Well, we see it down here in verse 7. Because you have relied on the king of Syria and have not relied on the Lord your God, therefore the army of the king of Syria has escaped from your hand. What? God was saying, you really messed this up, Asa, because you thought that Syria was a threat to you, and so you made an alliance with them. Asa, I was going to deliver Syria into your hands. You were not only going to be protected from the northern tribes of Israel, but I was going to flip it around. And when they attacked and Syria was going to come with them, you were going to defeat them and you were just going to march right up to the north. How history would have been changed had that happened? Israel would have oil. It would have, so much would have been different if there's no Syria, just a parking lot for Israel tours, you know? And God's going, that's what I wanted to do. And what messed it up is that you limited me. You thought that what I wanted to do was to just keep you fairly secure and safe. And so you took it upon yourself to make sure that that would happen. You came up with an idea and you delivered. But God said, I had so much more in store for you. So much more that I wanted to do for you. But you limited me with your own plans. And I'm convinced that's another reason why God doesn't need too much of our thinking, why he doesn't really need us to calculate and to figure the odds and to figure out what it is that he wants to do. Because God's ways are so much higher than ours, because he promises that he will do for us more than we could ever ask or think. It's why God doesn't just answer all of our prayers instantly with a yes. Because the things that we think we want, over time, we sometimes look back and say, God, I'm so glad you didn't answer that prayer. I'm so glad you didn't do that for me. Think about some of the people that when you were young and you thought, man, this is the perfect person for me. God, please, if I could only marry this person. And you get down the road and you look at them and you go, oh, God, thank you. You see who God put you with and you go, Lord, you had a way better plan. I never thought I could do this well. Now, some of you have been married several times before. Think about it, the person that you married. Don't you wish God had just told you no? But he was probably telling you no. And you were just going, no, I can, this will work. I promise you, God, I know this person's a little rough around the edges. But when they get out of jail, I have a feeling that this is really going to be a good thing. I can fix them. I have confidence in my own ability. I am Mr. or Miss Extreme Makeover. I can fix this person. And so God didn't give them to you. You just took them. You go, this will work. I got to have somebody. Come on. And it's not so easy. It's not what you thought it was going to be. Fixing and repairing that person, oh, it's a bigger plan than what you thought it was. And God is saying, listen to me. I can save you a lot of that agony and that pain. I can keep you from constantly going off in directions where it's going to be destruction for you. It's going to hurt. And sad to say, with Asa, as great of a king as he was, as much as he reformed Israel and did a lot of great things and had the heart that David had in some ways, yet here towards the end of his life, he just decided he could do it himself. He just decided that I can figure this out. My experience has taught me that here's a good way to fix it. May God deliver us from that kind of thinking. Because, you know, sometimes it does work. Sometimes it works out. Sometimes we force our way. Sometimes we manipulate and just connive our way into salvaging something and making it work. And yet God looks at us and just shakes his head and says, I had such a better plan for you than this. So much more that I wanted to do through you, and you limited me. It's like where Jesus stood over Jerusalem as he surveyed that great city, and he began to cry. And he said, oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, you who killed the prophets, how I longed to gather you as a hen gathers her chicks, but you would not. You wouldn't. He proceeded down the Mount of Olives and gave his life for Jerusalem. He will one day fulfill all that he's intended for them, but the agony of his heart as he looked at people who would not rely on him, people who would not trust him, and now what they were going to have to go through for thousands of years of misery and pain and torture because they didn't see the vision that he had for them. They wouldn't hear him as he offered himself as their Messiah. And I'm convinced that for each of us, there are areas of our lives where, you know, it's worked out all right, but not what he wanted it to be. Not as outrageously successful as what he wanted to do. And you and I can think of plenty of people that we know. You look at their lives and go, this person had so much potential. If they only understood what they could have accomplished, if God had got a hold of their lives, and yet they were just satisfied to do what they were doing.
Let's not fall short of God's best. The only way for that to happen is to rely on the Lord. Hey, thanks for joining us today for The Balanced Word with our pastor and teacher, Dave Rolfe. We're going through 1st and 2nd Chronicles, and stay with us for more teaching from Pastor Dave. These programs are available by podcast at thebalancedword.com. Again, thebalancedword.com. We'd also like to offer you Pastor Dave's Through the Bible series on a USB thumb drive for a gift of $20 or more. Go through the Bible with Dave by ordering this special series today. Call 949-362-7475. Or go to thebalancedword.com. Your gifts help to make these shows possible on stations like this one all across the nation. So thank you for standing with us with either a one-time gift or ongoing monthly support. Donations can be made at thebalancedword.com. Or again, call 949-362-7475. Here's Pastor Dave with the rest of his message, Relying on the Lord.
One of the smartest guys I ever knew was a kid I went to high school with, and good guy, a lot going for him, funny, kind of a nerd, but really smart, smartest person I think I've ever known. Scored perfect scores on his SATs, but there in high school, he decided that, well, he knew someone who could hook him up with a job being a Border Patrol agent. There's nothing wrong with being a Border Patrol agent, but for this guy, it was definitely underemployment. He had every college offering him, you know, full rides to go do whatever it is that he wanted to do, but he kind of got into guns, and this guy's like, hey, it's cool. If you become a Border Patrol agent, you can get a concealed weapons permit, carry a gun anywhere. And somehow, he, in his 18-year-old mind, got the idea that a great way to spend the rest of my life would be sitting in a toll booth with a gun strapped to my waist. And he did it for years. I don't know. I've lost track of him. I don't know where it all ended. But I often sat and thought, you know, that guy might have found the cure for AIDS or something. But instead, there he is guarding the border. I'm glad there are people guarding the border. But this guy could have done more. I know things that would have been more fulfilling, better contribution to society in every way. But his thinking was like this. He had blinders on, and all he knew was what he wanted to do. Well, I remember when I was in high school, I decided that what I wanted to do was just to be a mechanic. Now, nothing wrong with being a mechanic, and I enjoyed working on cars, and I thought that was what I was going to do. I was a really good student, and there were things that I was very effective at, but I liked working on cars. And, you know, if you like doing something, fine, do it. But that's what I set out to accomplish, to do. And, you know, but after a time, I was waiting for the scholarship from General Motors, and it didn't come through. And seriously, to go to their thing, and they tested all of our auto shop students, and whoever had the best score was going to get this scholarship. Well, every one of my class cheated off me, and I just gave them each like one wrong answer, so I knew that I'd ace the thing. And I was crushed when I didn't get the scholarship. And then shortly, a few months later, I accepted the Lord, began to make other plans for my life, and ultimately within the next couple of years, God called me to go into the ministry. I'm not saying being a minister is better than being a mechanic. Believe me, it has its days when I wish I was a mechanic. But God had a plan for my life, and my plans could have easily blocked the way. I ultimately ran into the vice principal from my school, and I said, I'm just curious, how come I didn't get that General Motors scholarship? And he said, I went to those guys from General Motors and I told them if they gave that scholarship to you, that I was going to, I'll clean it up, physically accost them, and they would never set foot on our campus again. He said, I knew that you could do more than that. I knew that wasn't where your life was supposed to end. I didn't know it, but he did. And God is that way with all of us. He sees what it is, who we are, and what we would be best at, and how he can most effectively use us. And the funny thing is, he usually wants to do something in you that you're not qualified to do. He usually wants to do something that you have no business doing.
We'll again be encouraged to rely on the Lord on the next Balanced Word with Dave Rolfe, a presentation of Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel in Aliso Viejo.
Wake up my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hands. And yeah.